This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, give us a call, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. It's No Filter Friday. Would love to hear from you. There are so many hot topics to talk about. I know that there's a lot of frustration out there as it relates to insurance, both auto insurance, homeowners insurance. They are going to be trying to tackle that problem in the Louisiana legislature. The session starts Monday. It has been, there has been a lot of chatter about different proposals out there. You heard Senator Talbot said a lot of proposals by senators, equal number, if not more, by House members, trying to figure out what is the best approach here. And the insurance commissioner, Tim Temple, has his own package of bills as well. At the national level, obviously, tariffs is the big conversation there. I don't know if anyone has any opinion about that. The Trump administration has put in place a 90-day suspension of the reciprocal tariffs. He kept the 10% tariff across the board in place. That is still sending shockwaves across the market. The market is, I think, down today, last time I checked. You know, it's a very dynamic situation. People are monitoring inflation to see whether or not we have a high propensity or high probability of going into a recession or not. Kind of mixed signals on that front, mixed attitudes by a bunch of different economists. Some even believe that we're in a recession already, but there's no doubt that Wall Street has really sounded the alarm in many different ways as it relates to these tariffs and how that's ultimately going to play out. The Trump administration obviously has blinked, right? They have stepped back on tariffs, and a number of European nations are still waiting to see what's ultimately going to happen there. Some of the leaders in Europe have said, we are not going to respond to a tweet. Some countries have. And I think it's been part of the overall strategy of Trump. I don't particularly care for that strategy. I don't think it's of much value. I think we have to be more measured in our approach because a lot of these folks are our allies. Are we in a good position? Do we have a good deal? I don't think so, like most other people. Do we deserve to get a better deal? Yes. The real question is the execution. How do we go about accomplishing same? My approach would be a little different. But sometimes it's hard to argue with success. President Trump has had success. He had success in his first administration in being able to bring people to the table. I think the uncertainty of Trump was kind of his, no pun intended, his Trump card. I don't know that that Trump card today is as valuable as it was the first time around. And I think a lot of folks are just willing to kind of ride this out in the short term to see where he is ultimately going to be. I think there is recognition amongst the countries that if they come together and they negotiate in the same fashion with the U.S., that they are stronger together than they are apart, and that they put the U.S. back on its heels. So I suspect that that's where we're going to be. that a number of the countries inside of the EU are going to communicate in a much more robust and healthy way about the position that they're going to take relative to the trade imbalance issue that President Trump is pushing. And I don't believe that we're going to be as successful as we once were. All right, let's go to the talk lines. We have Kenny. Kenny, what say you?
Hey, Jeff. My question is, and, you know, the president, everyone's doing a lot as far as deportations go, but I've never heard the first thing done to anyone who hires these people, a corporation or individual business owners. Is there a law against hiring them?
Yes, there is. And in fact, you don't see as much media on it. Actually, they made one of the largest roundups that they've made in years that was reported out. And I want to say it was in Washington State. I've been kind of monitoring to see what they're doing on that front and trying to gather as many news articles. And I read one just about 2 days ago. They actually did one here in Louisiana as well. And I know that they conducted an operation in Mississippi. I don't know all of the numbers of the individuals that were actually arrested. And obviously the business owners, it's interesting when you read these stories, they don't say much about whether or not the business owners have been summoned or otherwise and how that they will be dealt with. But you're beginning to see more and more activity in that realm. I don't know how intrusive they're going to get in the future, because they really have their hands full with what's going on with having to go to court to defend almost everything that they do in this space right now.
Sheriff, it leads me, and I've heard you speak of it briefly over the years on your program. Why, if Congress is serious about this, and why wouldn't they actually put teeth in the law, and why not require everyone to use E-Verify? Why not use it? I've heard talk of it, but no one says, why don't they insist and force business owners to use it?
Well, the answer is simple. We have a lot of industries, the agricultural industry for one, that want it. And part of the pressure is that if they have to pay higher rates to pick crops that require more human capital than the harvest of other crops, we don't want to pay $6, $7, $8 for a head of lettuce. And that's what you pay in Europe. We don't want to pay that here. So what happens is that the members of Congress succumb to the pressure of not only the consumer, but of those in the business that are saying, you know, we won't be able to charge enough for our product, but in the end, they ultimately will. And they're being dishonest and they're being hypocritical. Everyone is on this issue.
Right. Doesn't it sound a little bit like lip service? Well, you know, we're not going to do anything about this.
Absolutely,
because
it is.
They come here for jobs. A lot of them. And the fact of the matter is, if the jobs aren't available to them, they're not going to be as likely to come across. And if we want to say it from the administration on down, and it's not just this administration, but if you really want to do something about it, that's got to be an area where you would hit and say, we're going to penalize you if you hire one of these people.
I think it was J.D. Vance that said it the other day, that this country has an addiction to cheap labor. You know, we talk about the medically uninsured and everything else, the working poor and the whole nine yards. Well, the reality is that we are all individually and collectively guilty of finding ourselves in this situation.
Yeah.
We have some sectors of the economy that are completely and totally overpaid for what they do, for the value proposition of the job that they have. And we have other sectors of the economy that are woefully underpaid. And there are any number of influencers there, whether it be unions, activist groups, or otherwise, that have caused this phenomenon to happen in this country. there needs to be a rebalancing. There needs to be a reengineering of this. Is it going to happen anytime soon? I don't think so.
No, and it brings you to the minimum wage. And one thing is to encourage American workers, citizens, to take some of these jobs. If you, I mean, it, to me, it's ludicrous to have the minimum wage sitting where it's sitting right now. And everybody's going to start right away with, I want to pay the guy at McDonald's flipping burgers. Let me tell you, there are a lot of senior citizens that are keeping a roof over their head and food on the table by working at McDonald's and places like that to supplement what they have.
And well, and, I think that's something that needs when you look at some of the most successful franchises, what you're going to find is most of these franchises pay more than the minimum wage. Because they develop a stable workforce. They have people there that actually care because they feel like they're more appreciated in the job that they do. You can figure it out. I guarantee you, if you went and drove through 50 drive-through locations, that you would probably have a 97% efficacy rate of picking out who's paying their employees more than minimum wage.
Absolutely. That's where you get a smiling face.
Yeah.
Instead of a person, yeah, what do you want?
You know what's interesting?
Don't you think that needs addressing, though, the minimum wage? Isn't that something? It's off subject, I guess, but
No, it's not off subject. It is a very important subject, and it is something that we've got to come to grips with, because if we want to deal with the working poor, and I bring this back to immigration, and yes, I am guilty of it, because we don't do a good job with the 42, 43 million people that live below the federally identified poverty level now. Why would we want more? And that's, I can't get a straight answer from economists or otherwise who saying, oh, you need this influx of the workforce. Well, we have a workforce here that we're not managing very well. And if you don't think that people that come in, that if they can get on this same ticket to ride, that this is where they're going to go? I'm not saying it's going to be more than half, but we can't afford one. I mean, why would we?
Let me give you an example. I'm a senior citizen, but my Social Security, for whatever reason, whatever how my life has gone, isn't enough to get by on. So I'm a senior citizen who works 40 hours a week to try and get by. And I barely make a little bit more than minimum wage. And there's a lot of people like me out there.
Yeah, and then you get nasty people like this texting in, can't wait to see your ass out there in the fields picking produce. Well, the difference here is, and it's interesting that people talk about this, is that I worked hard in educating myself. I paid for my advanced education. My parents paid for elementary school and high school. Once I left the house, I was on my own. That was the gig. I knew it. I left at a very early age. I was on my own. And I did it so I wouldn't have to pick produce.
How much were you making an hour at the Shell station on Veterans and Williams?
Well, I'll go one better than that. When I first started in law enforcement, I made $2.31 an hour.
My first job was $1.65 an hour, yeah.
Yeah. You know, but the point is that I always plugged away knowing that I did not want to stay as a lower income wage earner, and went to school at night, 11 years part-time at night to get my undergrad degree. Ultimately was blessed and was able to go to law school. But, you know, it takes hard work. It's not for everybody, but be that as it may, we got to come to grips somehow with minimum wage. We are going to pay more for goods and services, and hopefully we will be able to save on the back end of maybe getting to a point in time where there'll be benefits available, they can afford some benefits. It's still going to be hard on a minimum wage, depending on whatever number we resolve on, you know, because in order to get out of the working poor classification, they're talking about getting to $16, $17 an hour. Your police officers on the street right now, your entry-level folks in the corrections department, they're not making more than that, not too much more than that. And so when you start to put that in context of some of the critical positions that we have in our economy where we're not paying many people a whole lot more than that, and government services go up, which means what? You're going to have taxes going up. And that's why I focused on priorities. I've managed a budget. There are a whole lot of things we all love to do, right? We all would love to save the world. But you've got to be able to provide the basic services first, and not only provide them, but provide them in an effective and efficient and a proficient way, where you don't have the hiccups all the time, the breakdowns all the time, and you're on top of your game before you should spend a dollar anywhere else. And that's what the city of New Orleans needs to do. They need to take a step back and stop being involved in all of these high and lofty programs that they want to get involved in, and get back to the basics and get good at the basics, fine-tune their organization, retool it, gain a better understanding of its weaknesses, improve on those before they do anything else. Because it's going to cost money.
I just hope the voters in Orleans Parish, when it comes down to it, don't re-elect a carbon copy of what they have now, and then I'm afraid that may very well happen.
Well,
and that's scary.
We need some leadership, and we need folks that have the political moxie to make the difficult decisions, because you cannot be all things to all people. No singular agency has the assets or resources to enjoy that position. Cannot happen. And the most effective word in the English language when you're trying to right-size, re-engineer, and get things on all fours from a business perspective is one word, and it's a complete sentence. No. It's a powerful word. We'll be right back, Kenny. Thank you so much for the call. Got to get to a break. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. The Dawn Busters Kiwanis Club, they're at it again. The 2025 Bunny Bash is tomorrow, and Trip Rabelais, director of Lafreniere Park, joins us to tell us all of what the offerings are. Trip, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noah. Appreciate you having us on.
Trip, this is always a fun event. Tell us about what folks can expect if they go out to Lafreniere Park from 11 to 3 tomorrow.
Bunny Bash is our celebration of Easter. We've got two Easter egg hunts, but luckily we have three different age groups, so we actually do six Easter egg hunts. We have 15,000 eggs for the kids, Cane's gift certificates in certain eggs, rubber ducks for every kid, candy for every kid. It's like going to your grandparents' house and getting sent home with all sugared up and everything else. We just try and make it a lot of fun for everybody to come out here.
So, for the benefit of the listening audience, do we know what times these Easter egg hunts will occur and what age groups?
The event is from 11 to 3. The egg hunts are at 12:30 and 1:45. The age groups are 1 to 4, 5 to 7, and 8 to 12. We separate them that way so that the little kids have a better shot of getting, you know, a good time and not having to wrestle with their older siblings.
Right. So 12:30 and 1:45, all three groups will have an Easter egg hunt at 12:30, and all three groups will have one at 1:45. Is that how it's going to
work? Correct. We have three different pens set up for them, three different areas where the Easter Bunny is going to put their eggs, and the kids will be able to get in there. And, you know, Sal LaRock, he's got so many prizes for this time. I couldn't list them all if I was on all day. Sal went nuts for this one. He's got enough stuff. He's got two ride-on scooters that he's giving away. So certain eggs are going to have a special notation in them, and two kids are going to leave with ride-on scooters. This is going to be a great event. It's become an annual event, and it's really one of my favorites because you get to really see the kids come out and have a really, really good time. It's right by the carousel. Really looking forward to this one.
And I love the way that y'all break up into the smaller groups, because that makes perfect sense, right? And that gives the parents an opportunity to take the pictures and everything that goes along with that.
Well, and we really have improved that this year. In years gone by, we kind of put the pens next to each other. They're all in the same area this year, but you'll be able to get around the pen and be able to see the kids from a bunch of different angles. So parents will have a good opportunity to get those pictures that they want and those videos that they want so that they can share them with the rest of the family. I'm really very enthusiastic. And then, of course, the weathermen have finally given us a weekend where the weather couldn't be any better. Tomorrow's going to be spectacular out here.
Yeah, it's going to be like air conditioned out there is what I'm told. Also, there's face painting, a bunch of different games, a photo alley that you can take photos with, I guess, cutouts or things of that
nature. The cutouts are actually, I'm in my office, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at the cutouts that they have. This one's Bugs Bunny and Donald Duck, where you can stick, I mean, not Donald Duck, Daffy Duck, where you can stick your head through. I can see Minnie in the next one, Minnie Mouse in the next one. Look, Sal went all out on this. He really loves this event, and the Dawn Busters have just really stepped up, and this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful time. And the carousel is included, the spacewalks, the face painting, all of that stuff's included. They have vendors for the parents to shop at. It's really going to be a nice time. I know they're having popcorn because they asked me where they could plug it in, but there's going to be a lot of things out here to do.
And I think y'all separate by age group the spacewalks as well, if my memory serves me correct. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. We try, you know, we want, you know, Lavenir Park safe all the time, but we want it to be safe in every aspect. So we try and keep, you know, I've got a 10-year-old granddaughter and I've got a 6-year-old. And, you know, sometimes the physical size difference is a little much. So we need to make sure that they're all safe when they play.
And Tripp, I got a text here. Will the Easter Bunny be on site for pictures?
I believe the Easter Bunny will be on site. I think he's going to be, from what I have been told, this is his warm-up event to make sure he's ready for next Sunday. So I'm thinking that he'll be here for a little while. Might have to go take a nap just so that he gets his energy for the next Sunday, but definitely will make an appearance here at this event.
As he does every year. We're very fortunate in that regard. So, and this is there a charge? Is there a fee?
Yes, $10 a child and $5 for adults. And this is a fundraiser for the park. Dawn Busters is very generous here in the park. They have bought us water fountains. If you see the beautiful rose gardens and the flowers we have, that's Dawn Busters. That's Sal LaRocque. That's not the crew of Lavenir Park. That's the volunteers from Dawn Busters. And these events help fund those things during the year. So it's really an important thing. We keep the cost to a minimum so that everybody can afford to come. We are still by far the least expensive thing you can do in the region. And I think this year, I think Sal's just gone above and beyond this year of going and getting stuff. The kids are going to take the eggs home with them this year. Everybody gets a rubber duck. Everybody gets a bag of candy. Let's say I'm reading through it. 50 eggs have cane certificates. 50 of them have game on certificates. He's got stuffed animals. He's got, I mean, when I tell you he went crazy, he went crazy. He's got Easter bags.
He's the greatest.
to have silent auctions on with candy coming out the top of it. I've had to keep my guys out of it. Look, this is going to be a heck of an event. We say that about all of them, but this one really, we're starting to fine-tune this one to a perfect event. So I'm really, with the weather like it's been all week, the grass is perfect. The area is perfect. We really just want everybody to come out and have a great time and enjoy their time in the jewel of Jefferson Parish, Lavenir Park.
Absolutely. The 2025 Bunny Bash, Saturday, April 12th. That's tomorrow at Lavenir Park, 3000 Downs Boulevard, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Easter Egg Hunt, the three individual groups, age groups, one at 12:30 and the other at 1:45. So get out there and partake of all that they have to offer. And let me tell you, when he talks about Sal LaRocque, he's the greatest. He's probably still hustling right now.
Right now, he's getting more prizes somewhere right now. No, I'd like to thank you as always. You guys help us make these things possible. And without the support of WWL, you know, we can't get the word out. So I really do appreciate you guys as well.
It is our pleasure, and thank you all for all of the work that y'all do in making this a better place to live, work, and raise our family. Tripp Rabelais, director of Lavenir Park. We'll be right back, folks. We'll go back to the talk lines, 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. You know, we were talking earlier about insurance, and you heard that Senator Kirk Talbot was talking about the wildfires in California, and that hasn't really helped our situation because all of the reinsurance, we're all going to the same point at some point on the line of reinsurance. There are just a few players worldwide there, so everybody's ending up at the same place at some point. And it's interesting what's happening out there and how much it's very much going to influence. I think the way that insurance companies are looking at some of the rebuild and everything else. In fact, I was just reading earlier this morning a story in the New York Times about Steve Soboroff, who was actually the L.A. recovery czar. After 90 days, his relationship with Mayor Karen Bass in L.A., who they've known each other for years. He's been very much a civic activist for that area. I think he was a former baseball player. Everyone knows who he is. He's out. And he's really not happy. He's not happy about the way that this has gone down, his authority. It even started out with his originally how he was going to be compensated. He is actually a developer. He knows a little bit about what he's doing, and he lived in Pacific Palisades. But it gives you kind of an opportunity to glean how difficult this is going to be in the rebuild there. We saw it. We experienced it, right, in the aftermath of Katrina. In fact, we are still rebuilding. I mean, when you look at this roads program that's still going on throughout the city of New Orleans, those dollars were the dollars that were set aside in the aftermath of Katrina. And we're still in 2025, 20 years later. That storm was in 05, right? Yeah, 05. 20 years later, we're still spending dollars there. It goes back to what I said. You have to have the ability to receive. The money can come in, but if you don't have the infrastructure, if you don't have the processes and the confidence in what's being done out there to manage this and the oversight and everything that goes along with it, you will be stuck on stuck. And that only exacerbates and frustrates the insurance industry more. They don't like that. They want to be able to manage these claims in a shorter period of time, get the money in the hands of the individuals that they need to get the money in the hands of, and move on and go about doing their business. And the longer that you have all of these issues and everything else that goes along with that, the worse it becomes, not only for the residents of California, but the residents throughout this country. And meanwhile, we've had a series of bad weather patterns here, tornadic activity, things going bad, flooding, serious flooding in Kentucky. I was looking at videos the other day of Buffalo Trace, the distillery of Buffalo Trace, underwater, flooded. You're beginning to see that more and more. It's why I asked if they're kind of watching what's happening out there. A lot of life lessons as to what not to do, what to do in dealing with insurance companies and with redevelopment. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when we get struck again. And how much damage we have to endure and how we go about rebuilding and whether or not the leadership is available in order to accomplish same. You know, so very much an interesting thing to watch to see how this is going to go about being handled. Already from the very inception, can you imagine you've got 3,000 square foot structures that they're saying the demo to remove the debris. There's not a lot of demo because the structure's flat, right? To remove the debris is going to be somewhere between $150,000 to $175,000 a structure. Is that crazy? It's like five or six times greater than what it would be here. And of course, that consumes a lot of the insurance coverage that you have, you know, and in payment of that, if they don't think that that's going to have a chilling effect and chilling impact on the on the ability of these folks to rebuild their structures, they're sadly mistaken. These are all things that as we watch, we want to make sure that there are protections and things put in place here, again, in the aftermath of storms, as to how we're going to go about rebuilding. I can tell you that in the aftermath of Katrina, the JPSO re-engineered their whole thought process about a bunch of different things. Although we were prepared, we only lost 13 vehicles in that storm because we were very effective at evacuating within. We worked with property owners that had high-rise garage. We provided security for them and their tenants, and they provided us parking spaces, and we put all of our physical assets, over 1,100 automobiles, into probably 7 different locations and only lost 13 cars throughout that event because the pre-planning and what we had learned in other storms, always learning and always looking and seeing what's happening not only here but in other areas of the country. And that's why I pointed out that this is an incident that we need to really watch to see how this will ultimately play out, because it could be, it will be a defining moment for LA, for LA County. And already I think they're behind the eight ball. There's a lot of confusion that's going on there. You've heard me say this before as it relates to FEMA, and we're not exactly sure. And you heard Cameron Henry, the president of the Louisiana Senate, say yesterday they wish they had more information about how FEMA is going to be re-engineered. They already know that millions upon millions of dollars that they were anticipating coming down to the state of Louisiana will not as a result of cuts. They don't know the full extent of the impact, and we going into a session Monday. And hopefully we're not having to call ourselves back into a special session because we may face cuts far greater than we ever thought was possible. And I doubt that that's going to happen, but you never know. And they would love the having the comfort of knowing what the extent of all of these cuts are going to be. When you have events like this, there's no telling how much money is being expended federally and what the ultimate ask is for. I'm confident that in California they're going to ask for way more than what is reasonable, because they always do and they always have. And it'll be interesting to see where this is ultimately going to fall. And in the midst of these changes of re-engineering FEMA, what will they be able to take advantage of and what they will not be able to take advantage of? Because they're kind of in the same predicament. They're in the middle of an event and the rules are changing. And, you know, so the ask are being made. The administration is evaluating those. And once those are in place, they're going to impact us too. We're going to get a better understanding of where we are. All right, let's get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Ian Hoke's in for Scoot, and he's free-falling. What do we have coming up?
I'm free-falling, Sheriff. feels good, man. Feels real good. Today we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. We're all familiar with the big ones. But
there's none of those going around.
No, it's all on the up and up, man. Well, look, I mean, I'm not talking about like QAnon or the 2020 election. There's also like, you know, like smaller regional conspiracy theories that take hold that have nothing to do with current events or politics. So we're going to talk about that with Colleen Sinclair, who's an adjunct professor of psychology at LSU. In the final hour, we'll talk to Blaine Braddock from the University of Holy Cross. They got their big annual crawfish cook-off tomorrow. $25 tickets in advance, $40 at the gate. I think you should get the tickets right now and go eat all the crawfish you can eat for only $25. Also, there's a post on the New Orleans subreddit that is getting a lot of attention. Somebody got in a bad bike accident on Wisner Boulevard, and then they were helped into an ambulance by total strangers, good Samaritans. So I want to ask the audience, have you ever been in a situation where a total stranger saved your biscuits? Have you ever been that good Samaritan and helped out someone who needed it, even if you knew that you'd never get the credit? And we got some great bumper music, and we'll talk about French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest and all the rest. It's going to be a good one.
Stay tuned, folks. Ian Hoke is headed your way on Free for All Friday. We hope that you enjoy the show. And I hope to see you out at French Quarter Fest. Got to visit with some folks yesterday, took some pictures, had a blast. Look forward to the remainder of the weekend. We'll see you Monday.